President.
Senator from Washington.
Mr. President, I come to follow my colleague from Texas to talk about the very issue that he brought up, which is where is America going with semiconductor manufacturing, design, and development. And on this last point, I'm pretty sure we see things differently. I'm pretty sure that the majority, or probably all of the Democrats, will be enthusiastic about supporting both manufacturing in the United States, as well as making sure that if federal dollars are used, prevailing wage should be applied. So I'm sure we'll differ on that point. But I think that we are, at least on our side of the aisle, supportive of this concept that chip fabrication, chip manufacturing in the United States of America is an important sector, and that we're facing a chip shortage and that we should do something about it. If you think about it, semiconductors are like the oil of the 21st century. They become an essential aspect. They can be found in children's toys, in appliances, in computers, in cell phones, our telecommunications networks, advanced national security technology, as my colleague was mentioning. They enable healthcare, artificial intelligence applications, financial services, certainly in the area of defense. They have transformed how we communicate, how we learn, how we socialize, and yet they are so complex, the manufacturing so expensive. It can cost anywhere from 5 to almost 20 billion, I think 20 billion is one number I've heard, just to build these facilities. So this is why this issue has become so important. The United States has had strong leadership in the semiconductor area, but massive investments from other nations put us at a disadvantage when it comes to manufacturing. They're subsidizing and getting tax benefits up to 40% to build in Korea than in the United States of America. So the Endless Frontiers Act tries to address that because it really is a national security and telecommunications policy. In the 1990s, the U.S. produced over 37% of the global chip supply. And as you know, here in the United States, we have 48% of the world's aircraft production. But now these challenges, as we look at the chip supply, they're down to 12%. So I noticed in the Wall Street Journal, they said, well, why do we care? Like, why do we care? They basically are saying that chips in fabrication have become a commodity, and then we don't have to worry about it anymore. Well, as long as we're winning on the design side, we don't care where it's manufactured. Well, if you ask me, that's so 1980s. I mean, the idea that you could produce, design a product here, and then have it manufactured somewhere else. I mean, maybe that works with shoes or outdoor clothing, but it doesn't work with something as sophisticated, changing, as a high-tech innovation product like semiconductors. In fact, I would say, you know, if you really think that that thinking is the type of thinking that works, just look what happened. I mean, it's really pre-COVID thinking. I mean, we thought we could have the design done here and basically some of these devices that we used here, like ventilators, and we'll just produce them overseas. What could possibly go wrong? Well, we figured out what could go wrong. If we're not manufacturing ventilators here in the United States, something could go wrong, and it did. So the question is, what's going to go wrong if we don't manufacture chips in the United States of America? So the thing I don't think that the Wall Street Journal quite got right is that they don't understand that in today's innovation cycle, having a cluster of design, of manufacturing, of supply chain, of customers, of everybody working together is the new way to have an economic advantage. In fact, a recent study done by a Chicago research organization, I'm going to read from this report. Basically, it's all about clusters and why clusters are so important. Quote, an industrial cluster is a group of firms, stakeholders, supportive institutions that gain productive advantage from being geographically close to each other and related economies of scale. It continues by saying, as groups and related industries grow and develop, clustering helps lower business costs, increase the extent and benefits of specialization, deeper labor pools, better access to customers, suppliers, knowledge spills over. These and other advantages derive from an environment where balanced competition and collaboration. So I could go on, I'll submit it for the record, but that is what is happening with semiconductors. The Asian market has basically now become the epicenter for this level of production. And the question is, are we just going to forego that and end up basically with not 12% of market share here, but 6% of market share? And then our suppliers are going to continue to go where the investments and the energy and the ideas are. So that is why in the United States of America, where we still have clusters in various parts of the United States, my colleague from Texas knows this well because he has a cluster in Texas. My colleague from Oregon, who was out here earlier, he knows because he knows they have a cluster there. There are clusters in places like Arizona. So this is about whether the United States of America is going to continue to make this investment ourselves. Chips are essential to our national security and to telecommunications. In 1990, we produced over 37% of global chip supply, and we need to continue to make sure that we are going to be an investor in chip fabrication today. Today, as I said, we're at an inflection point because what's happening in a global basis, but according to Goldman Sachs, in 169 industries in the U.S. have products with embedded semiconductors, and there will be a 20% shortfall of components needed for those products. Last month, Caterpillar, headquartered in Illinois, said that it anticipated chip shortage impairing its ability to meet growing demand of construction and mining equipment. So we're not just talking about kids' gaming consoles or computers. We are talking about many sectors of our economy that depend on this. National security experts agree that if there were a greater trade war or military conflict, the United States would not be able to fill its demand for chips for national security and critical infrastructure. So that means people like car manufacturers and appliances, if you think about 5G and new technology, the post-pandemic economy won't be able to keep moving forward. The shortage also forced the auto sector to cut 27,000 jobs in April alone. Earlier this year, General Motors temporarily shut down three North American plants due to the shortage. Ford cut back Michigan production of F-150s in the popular Explorer, and Dodge is reducing worker schedules in Nevada plant producing Jeep Grand Cherokee and Dodge Durango. So these are having real life impacts on us today. The question is, we had a ripple of this just because of COVID. What if we had a ripple of this because somebody decided not to supply things to us? And these are things that we have to worry about just from a national security perspective. You have to worry whether we are going to get a supply chain that we can depend on. So we really are at an inflection point. We're in an inflection point where we need to do something about this sector. So one of the issues that I also, the chip fabrication and private R&D, they make huge investments. What we're talking about here represents a very small R&D investment partnership with the private sector as it relates to this. But what we are talking about is trying to get more manufacturing jobs here in the United States. So my colleague was just discussing this, you know, sector overall. And one of the things that people should think about, and I'm pretty sure people at home won't be able to see this, but, you know, these jobs in production and in various aspects of design and various even on some of the other aspects, even in management, computer, these are all well-paying jobs. These are jobs that literally are the types of jobs we want to be producing in the United States. I heard this story about Idaho, Micron, a big company that used to be a major chip fabrication, still doing chip fabrication, but the number of jobs in Boise, Idaho has fallen off, probably in the thousands, because this production has gone to other places. And now we're replacing them with call center jobs. So the question is whether we're going to make this investment in a key technology critical to our national security, critical to a lot of applications of the technology future, whether it's 5G or AI or various things, and whether we're going to be a competitor in this area of a supply chain and cluster that continues to innovate. Well, we know for a fact that semiconductor jobs in the production area are literally $94,000 a year. That's why we're fighting for this, because it's a sector in just the production end that are high-paying jobs. So are we going to spend time letting things go overseas and basically, okay, will allow us to have call centers, or are we going to fight for these high-paying jobs in the semiconductor space that we know will help us maintain our expertise and skill in the United States? So I ask my colleagues to just think about the fact that this notion that we design something here and we ship it overseas for cheap production does not fit this bill. That is not what we need to do to maintain a competitiveness in the information age on something as important as semiconductors. I think our history is rich with people like Thomas Edison and the Edison Park in what we were established in New Jersey, or Menlo Park, or now what exists in Seattle, or various places. People get that innovation happens in clusters. So if we're going to innovate, we have to make sure the United States is attracting this investment. We have to make sure that we are doing this here on our shores with the expertise and support. Now, a lot of my colleagues might say, well, you know what, let's just have the private sector do this, R&D. As I said, the private sector spends a lot on R&D. In fact, we think about $377 billion a year the private sector spends on R&D. But as we know, R&D isn't just done by the private sector for their specific interests. Basic science, advanced research, and applied science is done by the United States. So that's why this bill is plussing up this number here from the National Science Foundation. We had discussions here about plussing up the number from the Department of Energy. Obviously, we had a vote in the Senate even increasing the Defense Advanced Research Program Agency and their dollars. So what works about the United States of America is that we're an ecosystem. We're not a top-down. It's not like we basically are the government saying, this is what's going to be done. We create an ecosystem that's really based on American know-how, our ingenuity, and how to get things done. And what we're asking for as it relates to not only NSF funding to continue the work of R&D as it relates to semiconductors, but also to make sure that we're going to continue the focus of manufacturing and design and R&D and development and clustering and supply chain and companies working together. I know how important this is because in this Seattle area and Washington State, we are a leader in aerospace technology. We're 49% in the United States of aerospace manufacturing. If you don't keep manufacturing, do you think the supply chain would stay in Seattle? You think the supply chain would stay there in Seattle forever? All those companies? We have hundreds of companies that make product for Boeing. Do you think they would stay there if they weren't there? They will end up moving where the manufacturing is. That is what the information age is about. And it's certainly about that when it comes to technology products. The technology products are developed faster, quicker, with the innovation and the input from their customers. That's why if you look at these centers around the United States, they are also the places where you will find the biggest users of this technology. They're there, and they're there because they want to be close to their customers. They want to understand their customer needs. They want to have interaction. They want to have collaboration. And that is what innovation is today. Innovation is doing design and manufacturing close together. That is how we win. And that is why we need to pass this legislation as it relates to an investment in chip design and manufacturing R&D and to continue to attract manufacturing in the United States. Now back to my colleague from Texas, who I know agrees with this principle in an underlying way. When the federal government wants to make an investment in actual construction, we say that we should apply prevailing wage. And I've talked to many of these people in the semiconductor manufacturing design space. They say, do you see how expensive it is to do these plants? Do you see how expensive the equipment is? It's very expensive. So we need the best workforce. So guess what? We pay prevailing wage. So we're saying, because we are putting federal dollars on the table, we should pay prevailing wage. They think we should also pay prevailing wage. I'm not speaking for them, but in general, they feel like that is when they get their best product. So I ask our colleagues, because I'm sure I know where my side of the aisle is, we're going to be here to make an investment in this particular sector. We are going to figure out how to be competitive against Asia in semiconductor manufacturing. We are going to continue, as Andy Grove said, to be paranoid because we know that this is a changing landscape. And we are going to follow our colleagues who've made these decisions and make an investment for the future. So I ask our colleagues to turn down the motion to strike the underlying bill. The underlying bill already has this provision in it. To turn that down, and let's get about this business of a budget point of order, waiving it, and deciding to make the investment that we need to make to be competitive in a key sector of the U.S. economy. And if we do that, I guarantee you we will be well positioned to continue to move forward, and our national security will be more secure because we've made this decision. I thank the President, and I yield the floor.